I'm your host. I'm Karen Hartglass, and we are about to start It's All About Food. How are you today? Can we talk about food? You know I love talking about food. And before we get started with the main focus of the show today, I wanted to really just talk about my lunch today. It was such a dream, phenomenal experience that I really need to savor it a little bit longer. So I hope you don't mind if I share it with you, because it was so spectacular. And there are few things in the world that are so, from my point of view, so important and spectacular. When people serve you food, and food that nourishes you, food that is going to energize you and get you through the day and make you creative and feel good, but food that's also fresh, that's gentle on the planet, and prepared with so much creativity. Now, normally, in order to get lovely vegan food, if I don't make it at home, because I normally make it at home, I'm fortunate to live in New York City, the greatest city in the world, where we have access to so many wonderful restaurants and so many wonderful vegan restaurants. And I did not go to a vegan restaurant today. I was invited to a restaurant called Rouge Tomate, and they focus on organic, sustainable foods, and they made a spectacular vegan presentation for us, four courses of incredible, beautiful, colorful, creative foods that were paired with biodynamic wines. And everything, every bite, I kept thinking, I wish this for the world. Of course, I would love to see hunger removed from the planet. No one should go to bed hungry. Everyone should have enough food to eat. But I don't believe that it is difficult to prepare food that is such a beautiful event, so memorable. Why can't we experience that every day? Every bite should be just, wow, that's what life is about. Simple, fresh, lovely pleasures that end up giving us things that will make us better. All right, that was my moment of savoring my lunch. Thank you for joining me with that. And now I want to move on to my first guest. But before I do, I wanted to mention that food, which is what I talk about, nourishes our bodies. But sometimes our mind is so powerful that with certain behaviors we may grow up with, certain cultures we may grow up with, it limits us to what we're able to do. It might limit the choices that are best for us. It might limit or affect the foods that we choose to eat and how we take care of ourselves. And the mind is pretty powerful. So what we're going to talk about today is how we can work with our own minds to make the choices that we want to make, things that are good for us. And I don't think it's that difficult. Not after reading the book that I just read, and we're going to be talking about that today. I'm going to introduce my guest. Tom Dotz founded the NLP, Neuro-Linguistic Programming Institute of California, in 1990, growing it in 4 years to the largest organization of its kind in the United States. In 1998, he acquired NLP Comprehensive, initiating new programs to keep it at the forefront of NLP. Tom has studied NLP since 1978 and is certified as an NLP Master Practitioner and Health Practitioner, and he has a new book called NLP, The Essential Guide, Creating the Person You Want to Be. Welcome to It's All About Food, Tom.
Well, thank you very much, Karen. It's my pleasure.
So I've read your book.
Wow, thank you.
I read the whole thing, and the frustrating part for me was I had to read it by today, and I just got it a few days ago. So I now have to go back, because there are so many great exercises and recommendations. And this is a big workshop in progress thing that I imagine I can go back to many times. But I just wanted to get through the whole thing and digest it so that we could talk about it. So let's just start. Let's just start with neuro-linguistic programming. That's a mouthful.
It is an awkward title. It's really about figuring out what I think of as functional models for how people work. And what I mean by that is simply a model or a representation of what people that are really successful at something do that makes their effort produce results that are exceptional. And I can apply that to something as basic as my meditation practice. Or I can apply it to, as one of our students did, designing cockpits for fighter jets for the Air Force. Because it touches on all sorts of human behaviors. And one of the most, I think, important and fundamental ways that we do go into the book is choosing outcomes that are really the right ones for you. Because I'm sure you know there have been times when you wanted to do something and you were completely congruent about it. And you might even have noticed, to your surprise, how many pathways opened up for you that you hadn't expected. Once you'd really chosen and you were really congruent about that. And maybe it was your course in college, maybe it was a job, maybe it was a relationship. But once you decided, once you were really congruent about that outcome, all sorts of things opened up for you, opportunities and possibilities that you wouldn't have expected might have come your way.
Yep. Open and receptive, and everything's flowing.
Right, right. That state of congruence, internal congruence, really has a very simple physical effect. It sets our perceptual filters. That is, it sets our mind in a certain form, in a certain format, so that we're now noticing the things that will move us forward towards that outcome. It allows us a kind of focus that's easy and natural, and it really furthers our movement and really furthers us towards accomplishing our goals. And that's probably one of the most fundamental elements of NLP. And in the book we go through, well, as you said, it's virtually a seminar or a workshop in between a couple of pages. We also, of course...
There's like 400 pages, yeah.
Okay. Well, we kind of got carried away.
And then and it's not just in the book. There are so many links to get more and bonuses from your website.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm getting some really nice feedback on how the website turned out. People really enjoy it. I keep putting up more video examples and demonstrations and responding to what people want more of. Because we do have an enormous amount of resources, and I'm really happy to provide them to people.
Well, what I like is I have an engineering background, and I like when things are logical and you can explain something and it makes sense, and then I can apply it. And
yes.
And that's what this is. It's logical. It makes sense. And although I think many of us want to think that there are some things that we're born with, our personalities, our looks, and that can either be a bonus or a benefit or a limitation, what this is telling me is that we can, like you said, like the book says, creating the person you want to be. You can be anything that you want to be, and you spell out how to do it. It sounds kind of cliche, but I see how it can work. Now, I haven't had the opportunity, other than one of the first exercises in the book that you talked about, where you suggest imagining a time in your life when you felt you had all the possibilities and you felt really good and confident and to feel that.
Mm-hmm.
I went through that exercise where I created that little button on my with my thumb and my middle finger to remember that. And it's, I mean, just a simple little example, and it really works.
Yeah, it does.
It's magical.
It does seem that way at times. I frequently say that the challenging part about NLP is that it's so effective that somebody who's an absolute beginner can just wow anybody else on the planet with what they can do because it is so powerful.
Now, and what you did. Yeah, I don't know if this is, I hate to use this expression, the chicken and the egg, which came first, but I just used it, so I apologize.
Yeah.
I apologize to the chicken and to the egg, but I'm not, I've heard many, many things, bits and things I read in your book, I've heard from other sources, other self-help books or other therapies, and I'm not sure who tapped into who first, or maybe it all started somewhere and people are building on it. But, for example, there was that documentary film that came out, The Secret, that talked about the law of attraction, and a lot of it seemed very fluffy and really sensational and focusing on, oh, you can make all of this money if you just believe it. But this book actually gets into the truth behind it and the work that you can do to really make some of those things happen. You can attract what you want.
Right. There's a, boy, there's some real slippage there. And I really don't have much truck with the general run of people who are promoting magical thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of The Secret was just that. It was magical thinking.
Right.
Well, I'm sorry, but I'd like them to show me one example of somebody who just sat in their studio apartment in Manhattan, closed the door, turned off the phone, and just waited for money to show up.
Right.
You know.
You have to do the work.
You got to do the work. And, you know, the thing is, work is not the opposite of play. Mm-hmm. If you're doing what you're really congruent about, like Warren Buffett said, he never went to work a day in his life.
Mm-hmm.
And he's been rather successful.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's like most people would go, yeah, that's a pretty good degree of success. It's about really being, I'll keep coming back to this because it's a really solid theme, and that's about being congruent, about really knowing what you want. And if you know what you want and you're really working towards that, it's not so much, yeah, you're exerting effort. In that sense, it's work because you're making an effort. But when you were a child and you were playing hopscotch or you were, you know, playing with your friends, you were exerting a lot of effort. If you were running around the block, you were exerting effort, but it wasn't work. It was play. It was enjoyable. And when it comes to attracting success and wealth, a big part of that is being really clear about your outcome and retaining enough flexibility in the way of getting there so that you see what comes to you as opportunities, even if they may not look like one at the time. I remember one startup I was involved in years ago. We were calling on financial institutions, and I was one of the guys in the field, and I was talking to senior vice presidents, executive vice presidents at banks, and we were trying to convince them that the opportunity to offer insurance to their customers was a good idea. Well, we had a list of 47 different products and services that we could offer them. And there was one we put on there just at the last minute because it was a maybe possible. That was the one they bid on. And we wound up building a $200 million business inside of 24 months from zip.
Wow.
Because we listened and we watched and we saw what they wanted, and we were flexible enough to respond to what our customers wanted. We had the outcome in mind. We wanted to build a successful, large business in the financial institution sector. But we wound up doing what's now called subprime financing, securitizing subprime financing.
Mm.
Yes, I'm sorry, I was involved in that. Yeah, I know. Back in the 80s.
Okay, it seemed good at the time.
It seemed like a great idea.
Yeah.
We really felt we were giving people a second chance.
Right, sure.
And it turned out a little bit differently. But it was an example of, you know, having an outcome in mind and moving towards that while retaining enough flexibility, enough resilience to respond to the signals in your environment.
I'm not someone that uses a lot, self-help books very often. Mm-hmm. I know some people are really into them, and I'm not saying they're good or they're not good. But one of the things that normally annoys me in a book is when there's a worksheet and things that you're supposed to do, because I think, oh, you know, this is trivial. This is a waste of time. I don't feel that about what's in your book.
Thank you.
And, yeah. So, the first thing is, I mean, you make it sound so simple. Just know what it is you want to do. And so many people don't know what they want to do. And so you give an exercise where you make four columns, what you want to have, what you don't want to have, and what you have but don't want to have. I'm probably not getting it exactly right. but it really helps figure out what you want.
Yeah. there's a system and there's a process for sorting through that.
Mm-hmm.
And we included it in the clearest and simplest way we can, and I hope it works for people because it's really effective. And you're right. There are a whole lot of people that say, well, gee, I just wish I knew what I wanted. If I really knew what I really wanted and if I knew it was really worth having, well, I'd really go for it. Well, that's why part of the reason we wrote this book, because there are processes that help you sort that out and determine it and know, you know, with complete confidence that this really is appropriate for you and it is going to be good for you and for the rest of the people in your life, too. And one of the things that you probably noticed in there, and it may be something you come back to revisit, is that we also consider when you're thinking about your outcomes what we call your environment. And by that, we don't mean just the planet, although that's certainly a part of it. We mean your human environment, your relationships, your family. How's it going to impact them? Because one of the things you'll notice as you start really changing and moving more into becoming the person you really want to be is that people around you are changing too.
Mm-hmm. And that could be good or that could be not so good.
Some people may find it real challenging. If you're someone who's, you know, always been a procrastinator and never got anything done on time, and suddenly you're completing things ahead of schedule and you're moving right on, people around you might find that kind of disconcerting.
Yeah. But people may not be ready to change because change is hard.
For some people, it can be threatening even.
Yeah, threatening.
Mm-hmm.
Now, neuro-linguistic programming, I don't think most people have heard about it, and yet it's been around for a very long time. Why isn't everybody talking about it?
Boy, that's a good question. It has been around since the 70s,
mm-hmm.
and it was widely heralded when it first came along because it was producing some really remarkable results. And it actually is quite well known. It's really funny. It's another one of those cases of, an expert is somebody who's 50 miles from home with a briefcase and a prophet not getting any recognition in his own country.
Mm-hmm.
It's much more widely known in Europe and even in Russia.
Mm-hmm.
And it is... And here's the other thing. In America, where it has really transitioned into the mainstream is as a component of a lot of brief therapies, training courses, self-help books. A friend of mine was reading this book called Firestarter, and she said, oh, there's this wonderful process in there called the Disney Creativity Strategy. And I said, really? No kidding. And did they mention where it came from? She said, no, it's just in the book. And I said, yeah. Created by Robert Dilts back in the late 70s. And that's also in our book, too, in Chapter 8, I think, as
yes.
I recall. And it's a wonderful strategy for creativity, as well as for coming up with new possibilities and finding out how they align and really moving them into a workable plan, which is another really valuable function to have. In America, getting back to your question, NLP is included a lot in management training classes. However, it's rarely referred to or labeled as NLP. And part of this is because the consultants who are marketing their services want to market their services.
Right, okay.
Yeah. A good friend of mine, Frank Bork, is a psychotherapist in Corning, New York, and he's putting together a program. They're developing a program to work with veterans on PTSD using conventional NLP.
Post-traumatic stress disorder.
Right.
PTSD. Okay.
Right. He's working with the feds to get a grant, and they've come quite a long ways towards it. In any case, because he's based in Corning, he's also frequently invited to Corning Glass to observe various things that they're doing. And one time he was invited to one of their training courses, and he sat there through the morning, and at lunchtime went up and talked to the guy and said, you're doing NLP. And I went, oh, my God. Yes, actually.
You got to make a living.
You
got to
make a living, yeah.
Well, these skills can be used for an individual to work on themselves. It can be used for an individual who is having a challenging relationship, either a romantic partner or someone in the family or someone they're working with. I know that we can only control ourselves, but sometimes it can be so challenging when you're working with people that make things difficult. And to some extent, you can use these skills to make a difference. And then,
oh, sure.
And then the larger scale working in business. And it's, there's really great things in here. Now, I want to talk about some specific cases. So this show is called It's All About Food, and I love talking about food. And we're here, it's 2013, and obesity is soaring. People are overweight. I think the entire country has a food disorder.
Mm-hmm.
And it's from our culture. It's, we're being marketed. We have all these foods that are so unhealthy for us. And I'm imagining that for some people that are challenged with food, they could actually use some of these skills to help them get to a better diet.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. Most assuredly. You know, and again, starting with what do you want to accomplish? What do you want? You want a better diet. What does that really mean to you? This is the kind of simple exercises that we include in the book that gently guide you through what's important about that to you, you know? Because when you can really get in touch with your deepest motivation, then it starts to help you roll forward into the new plans and the little changes you make in your daily life that add up to the differences that give you the results you really want.
Now, I want to help the entire country.
Oh, okay.
To help them change their diet. And I know that there are a lot of people, they listen to this show or they hear me talking somewhere about food and they'll ask me. And it's great when someone's interested and they want information and I can share with them. That's easy. But for the people that need help and they don't even know
mm-hmm.
what it is they need, the question I have is how can I change my presentation so that I can get to more people and help them get to a better place with their food? That's my challenge.
Well, it's a matter of finding what motivates them, what gets their interest, what gets their attention. So if you want to consider our society as a whole and not one that we fall into, although we certainly do, it's people want to be, they want attractive, they want to be well-liked, they want to be successful. So how can changing a diet to one that is more sustaining help people do that? Gosh, there's a lot of examples. And in my personal diet history, I've been vegetarian, I've been and done vegan retreats at the Bacchus Institute and stuff like that. And one of the little things, one of the secrets I found out was that the raw foods diet, for instance, is one that Hollywood starlets will frequently go on for a couple of weeks just before they've got some
mm-hmm.
very important auditions.
Mm-hmm.
Why do they do that? Because it clears their skin amazingly.
Yeah.
It gives them a glow like they were 19 again.
Mm-hmm.
And it comes from the inside out, which is real different from the result they get after 4 hours of expert makeup.
Right.
And that's about the only other way they can do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think if you want to attract society as a whole to a change in its orientation towards diet and food, then you look for what is attracting them that you would be congruent about using as a way to get attention.
Mm-hmm.
So that, and also you've got the baby boomers who are hitting that age where they've got some real valid concerns about their long-term health. About their mental acuity.
Absolutely, yep.
Yeah. Well, you know that there's an enormous amount that diet can do to influence your long-term health, your well-being, and your mental acuity in particular. I think perhaps that's the greatest trigger for people reaching their 60s and their 70s.
Mm-hmm.
It's one thing to lose your physical abilities, but I think it's even more frightening to consider the possibility of losing one's mental abilities.
Absolutely, yeah. And it's amazing. I always like to say, you don't know how good you can feel.
Mm-hmm.
I just want everybody to be happy and not have pain and not suffer. That's all. That's all I want.
That's all.
That's all.
Let me know when you come up with a big goal.
And then, you know, you mentioned that when we make changes, we have to anticipate, if we can, what how those changes are going to impact the people around us. And I know a lot of people, when they're changing their diet in particular, have a lot of problems with their families because food is so ingrained in our culture and tradition and holidays, and people get scared.
Oh, sure.
And threatened, like you said before.
Sure.
Yeah. So
yeah, I'm part of a large family, and I had those experiences at Thanksgiving dinner. My brother-in-law kind of looking down his nose at me like, "You're not eating turkey?" Well, actually, I'm not. It's okay with me. I don't know why it bothers him.
Yeah, it's so threatening.
Yeah, it's really funny because it doesn't, you know, I think it's that there's a feeling that it's a judgment of some kind, and that could very well be the source of it.
Well, you know, it's there is something to it. We may or may not be judging, but the person who feels threatened feels judged because I think there's something internally that is in conflict with what's going on, and they're judging themselves.
Mm-hmm. Could very well be the case, yeah. And although my brother-in-law is one hale and hearty guy, there are a whole lot of other people who, in a similar situation, would have some pretty valid reasons for going, oh, God, you know, feeling judged because in their mind it's pointing out to them where they've been kind of lacking in taking care of themselves.
So is there something with NLP that we can use to make the people around us feel more comfortable with our change?
Well, rapport skills, which we certainly go into in the book, can go a long ways towards making people feel comfortable around you and feeling more comfortable around people, regardless of what you're discussing or what the particular situation is.
Okay, I'm going to have to become a master at this. I have a question. You talk about when you're with people, we all do physical things with our bodies, and when we are congruent, perhaps, with someone, we start to mimic each other.
Well, let me back up a little bit.
Okay.
We use congruent in a really technical sense, I guess you could say, in the book. And what you're describing is more what we call matching or mirroring, and it's a part of rapport skills.
Mm.
And we have, you know, in NLP, we've developed some really fine-grained technology around rapport, and it not in the general public rapport is usually thought of as, well, you get along well with people, and that's what's considered rapport. And I remember way back in the ancient history when I went to my first sales training class, and the guy said, well, now the first thing you got to do with your prospect is get rapport, and we all wrote down get rapport and nod our heads, and then he went on, and the next thing is, and he never went back to what rapport was, how you'd get it, or how you'd know if you had it.
Or how to spell it.
That either. So in NLP, we make some really, really good distinctions about how to establish rapport, how to maintain it, and how to break it. Because you don't always want to have rapport with everyone.
Mm.
Like that pushy salesman who, you know, just can't seem to get the message that you're not interested in what he's got to offer. It's really handy to be able to break rapport with a person like that.
So my question is, mm-hmm. When I'm with someone and I've noticed that we're mimicking each other, mm-hmm. and before I read this book, I started to notice that sometimes. And
excellent.
So sometimes I would break it because I thought, well, I don't want them doing what I'm doing.
Yeah.
So what happens when you break it? What feeling does the other person get?
Generally, they're not going to be aware of it consciously.
Mm-hmm.
It's very rare that anyone is. And generally, they're just going to feel a little bit of a distance, or it's a little bit in a natural interaction with someone. When the interaction is drawing to a close, people will stop mirroring or matching each other as closely. It's just a part of our disengagement process.
Mm.
So when you lead by starting that disengagement process, it's just a signal to someone else, like saying, oh, well, gosh, I've got to go now. It's just a subtler and gentler way of doing it.
Okay, well, on that note, I should say, oh, gosh, I got to go now.
Whoa.
No, I mean, Tom, we're at the end of our half hour, and that went fast.
Boy,
yeah.
You planned that really well. My hat's off to you.
Thank you so much for joining me. I can't wait to get to work on all my assignments here in NLP, The Essential Guide to Neuro-Linguistic Programming. Thanks for joining me on It's All About Food.
Hey, it's my pleasure indeed. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. I'm Karen Hartglass. You're listening to It's All About Food, of course. And we're going to take a break and then come back and talk with Dr. Barb Arno and the Aztec Diet. We'll be right back.